I'm Kerry Colonisi. I'm a member of the Penn Law faculty, and I am delighted to be with you today with Elizabeth J. Coleman, a poet and a public interest attorney and a Penn Law alum. We are delighted to have her back to the law school, where she will be speaking about her new book, Here, Poems for the Planet. Now, Elizabeth is the author of two other poetry collections, one called The Fifth Generation, the other called Proof, which was an award finalist at the University of Wisconsin Press. She's translated a bilingual sonnet collection called Pythagoras in Love, and her poems have been published in numerous journals and anthologies. She is the vice president of the Poetry Society of America, as well as a member of the New York, D.C., and Georgia state bars. She graduated, as I said, from the University of Pennsylvania Law School and has an MFA from the Vermont College of Fine Arts. And we're very delighted to have her here today to talk about this new project of hers, an anthology of 128 poems drawn from poets, living poets from around the world. And they speak to our planet, its beauty, its predicament, and its future, and what we can all do to make that future a better one. So again, let me welcome you, Elizabeth, back to Penn Law, and wondered if you could just start by telling us a little bit about where the idea for this project came from and how it came about.
Hi, so thank you so much for having me here, Kerry. I'm thrilled to be here. I have great affection for Penn Law. And the book has been is a real labor of love. And one thing that makes me particularly happy to be here to talk about it is that I really think it's, in a way, the work of a lawyer poet, not just a poet, a lawyer and a poet. I don't think I would have thought of it without being a lawyer. I don't think I would have thought of it without being and having been an advocate for many years. And so I'm very much an advocate for justice. That's always been what I've done in law. And I have found it almost unbearable to think of the injustice we're doing towards the earth and towards its creatures and towards the most vulnerable population of humans. And I have also come to feel that having a livable earth is almost is a condition precedent for justice. You can't have justice without a livable earth. So these ideas were floating around in my head. As our government turned away from addressing this, I didn't want to be just upset and sad. I wanted to do something as a lawyer, as an advocate. I wanted to do something. And one day I woke up and had this idea. And my idea was to create a book of poems that would somehow set the stage for the kind of hope and inspiration that could lead to action and stem indifference and cynicism, which I feel maybe some people are suffering from. And it's so daunting. The challenges to deal with climate change and deal with what we're doing to our planet are so kind of existential and overwhelming that it's hard to come to terms with them. And I found myself having trouble grasping that. And I find poetry flips that in the other direction and inspires me to act. And so that was my sort of the beginning of my vision.
Right. You say in your preface that you hope that this will be, in effect, an antidote to despair at this time.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask if you could describe the contents of the book and how what you have created lives out that vision that you had for the project.
I wanted something that was diverse, both from an international point of view, and I actually made sure to include poems from countries that were struggling more with climate change, like India and Bangladesh. And I also wanted to make sure that I included poets from all walks of life, poets from the city who are addressing the climate and nature from the point of view of the city, as well as the country. And I wanted it to be diverse ethnically and socioeconomically.
And you have indigenous poets, and I should add, though, that all of the poems in the book are in English. You have translated those that were written in another language originally.
Yes, someone else has.
There are other people translated.
Yes.
Right. So if you could, I know it's a rich collection, but I thought maybe to give our listeners just a little bit of a flavor for what they can find in the book, would you be willing to take one of them and read it for us?
I would love to read a poem. I thought that I would read the first poem in the book.
That would be wonderful.
Because I think it conveys a lot of what the book, the spirit of it. This is by a poet, Catherine Pierce, and it's called Planet. This morning, this planet is covered by winds and blue. This morning, this planet glows with dustless, perfect light, enough that I can see 1 million sharp leaves from where I stand. I walk on this planet. It's hard-packed dirt and prickling grass, and I don't fall off. I come down soft if I choose, hard if I choose. I never float away. Sometimes I want to be weightless on this planet, and so I wade into a brown river or dive through a wave and for a while feel nothing under my feet. Sometimes I want to hear what it was like before the air, and so I duck under the water and listen to the muted hums. I'm ashamed to say that most days I forget this planet, that most days I think about dentist appointments and plagiarists and the various ways I can try to protect my body from itself. Last weekend I saw Jupiter through a giant telescope, its storm stripes, four of its 67 moons, and was filled with fierce longing, bitter that instead of Ganymede or Europa, I had only one moon floating in my sky, the moon, called Moon. Its face familiar and stale. But this morning, I stepped outside and the wind nearly knocked me down. This morning, I stepped outside and the blue nearly crushed me. This morning, this planet is so loud with itself, its winds, its insects, its grackles and mourning doves, that I can hardly hear my own lamentations. This planet, all its grooved bark, all its sand of quartz and bones and volcanic glass, all its creeping thistle lacing the yards with spiny purple. I'm trying to come down soft today. I'm trying to see this place, even as I'm walking through it.
Elizabeth J. Coleman reading from her new book, Here, Poems for the Planet. I think we can all relate to that focus on the dentist appointments and missing out on the beauty of the earth. And this book of poems helps remind its readers of that beauty and inspiring them to help protect the planet. Can you tell us about the contents of the book itself? What do you see as the way it's structured and what it includes?
So it's structured carefully, and it's meant to lead you through the dealing with the kind of grief about what we've done to the planet in the early part, and then come out the other side towards hope and inspiration. So the first section is about the beauty of the earth. The second section is about what we've wrought, the sort of status of the earth, what we mourn, M-O-U-R-N. The third section is about animals and extinction. So those are two very sort of mournful sections. But then the fourth section is poems by young people, two of them 6 years old. So they're poems that really begin to bring joy back into the volume. And then the last section is poems of hope and inspiration. And so it's organized in a way that you go through this cycle of despair early and come out feeling hopeful and possibly joyful. And then the poems are all accessible. And so I chose them very carefully so they would all be excellent, I hope, but that also they would be accessible to people who haven't turned to poetry in the past. I want this to be a generally accessible volume. And it's also accessible to young people. The poems are clear. And then I wanted people to relate to this regardless of political affiliation, regardless of where they stand on other issues, because it's meant to be very inclusive and we are in this together.
That's wonderful. And I note that the first poem in that last section of your volume, the section, the five that leads to into that call of action, is a particularly fitting one for us at a professional school. It's a poem called The Occupation by Robert Bringhurst. And I just wanted to share a little snippet from that poem in which Bringhurst writes, "Our job is not to change the world, nor even to keep it from changing. No, our only job is being changed." And I think that's certainly something that anybody in the field of education is all about. We're all about helping to change people. And the whole volume that you've produced has as its motivation to change people, how they're thinking and how they're feeling about the planet and what they can do about it. And I note, by the way, for our listeners, that the book begins with a foreword by the Dalai Lama, who is also very hopeful and not despondent, but actually calling us all to take action as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the inspiration and execution of the idea of having the Dalai Lama write a foreword to this volume?
So I gave a lot of thought as to who I would want to write the foreword, and I felt like the idea felt big, and I wanted to see if I could find someone who reflected sort of a vision that was big, and who I admire very much. I have taught mindfulness for many years, so I'm a big fan of the Dalai Lama and have read a lot of what he's written. And I spent a lot of time kind of racking my brains where human being who just felt so kind of spiritual and big in that sense, who I might have like only several degrees of separation from. And I had written I had spent a lot of time on my my proposal for this book, both to get a publisher and to present it to various people. So I had something that I had worked on that had 20 poems and that really explained my vision for the book. And I realized that I knew someone who actually is at a university in the United States, which the Dalai Lama has an affiliation with. I have a good family friend who is the general counsel at that university. I sent it to him and I sent my proposal to him. I mean, he's a very serious guy. I sent my proposal to him and he said, he was excited about it. He said, and I asked, do you have any ideas of how I might make contact with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama? And he said, well, I'm very good friends with this person who was involved with the School of Religion at the university, who knows someone who's very connected to His Holiness. So it was like, 3 degrees of separation.
Wow. Yeah, that's a wonderful story and wonderful addition to this inspiring collection. Tell me a little bit about how you named the anthology Here. Tell us about the meaning behind that title.
Well, I think we spent a lot of time on what the anthology was going to be called. And I collaborated. One of the things I really collaborated with my publisher on was the title. Mm-hmm. They, of all the things I did, that was the title and the cover were the two things they really wanted a lot of input on. They let me form it the way I wanted. They let me organize it the way I wanted. They let me include the poems I wanted. But they had very strong feelings about the title. So actually, the subtitle, Poems for the Planet, mm-hmm. was written by my son, wow. for the record. Uh-huh. But then it was the title that we came up with, and we did a sort of contest among the publisher and with me, the people who work at the publisher and me, just to sort of, we all came up, we brainstormed names, and this one here. And the idea is, you know, we wanted the title, I felt so strongly that I wanted the book to be optimistic and I didn't want it to be. We were very focused at first on, you know, our little blue marble, you know, that mm-hmm. when the astronauts saw when they right. went into space, and that whole vision of our planet, right. as Frances Beinecke, who used to head up the NRDC, says, she calls it her favorite planet. I mean, this is our favorite planet, and it's our only planet, right. I think. Right. And so it was sort of, it came from this idea of us in space, and one of the covers we thought about was having that famous iconic picture of the Earth, but we didn't want something that had been done in that way. Yeah. And so we thought of an arrow pointing here. You know, if you think about us in the galaxy, it's so vast,
right?
Let alone the universe. And so here's a little arrow. Right. This is where we are, our favorite planet.
Yeah, so many people think about here in a very provincial, localized way, a piece of the planet Earth, but to think expansively of the entire planet as here for all of us, it's a very inclusive way of thinking about the predicament that we all find ourselves in together as a people of the world.
And that's beautiful the way you say that, because that's the point, is to be inclusive. Because one theme of the book is that those who are more marginalized, who have fewer resources, both countries and people, are the ones suffering most immediately and most drastically from climate change. That is true, and that is one of the themes of the book. Also true is that we're all in this together. This is everyone's problem, and it's meant to be very inclusive.
And you also have a guide to action at the end. Tell us about where that idea came from and how you put that together.
Well, I was having a conversation with my publisher, and they're absolutely wonderful, and we were talking about the idea of the book, and I was sort of pitching it, and we were discussing it, and one of the people at the press...
And this is the Copper Canyon Press.
Yes, which is a wonderful, wonderful nonprofit poetry press. And Copper Canyon, I was talking to them, and we were on a conference call, and he said to me, I had this idea of, I wanted to inspire people. You know, I wanted to bring people up. I wanted people not to feel just overwhelmed by the facts, but to find some inspiration and hope. And so I was talking about that, Joseph from the press said to me, so after they read it, do you want them to write a poem about their tree in their grandmother's backyard? Or do you want them to plant a tree? Or do you want them to suggest other people plant a tree? And I think it was in that conversation that this idea gelled of having a guide to activism. And in terms of having something that's never been done, And it just felt so right. And the Union of Concerned Scientists has been just a marvelous partner, and they were very excited by it.
So readers will come away from here, Poems for the Planet, with inspiration. What other ways do you envision, Elizabeth, this book making a difference?
Well, one thing is that I'm hoping that this book will influence lawmakers. The press, Copper Canyon Press, has raised the funds to give a copy of Here to every member of Congress, which I'm really excited about. So we're hoping to speak to their hearts and minds. And personally, I'm donating my royalties to the Union of Concerned Scientists, because I felt like this project was intended to really benefit our Earth, and that felt like the right thing to do.
That's wonderful. And it's an opportunity also to think about the connection between the worlds that you've inhabited, the worlds of poetry and the worlds of law. How do you think about that connection? Having been a poet and a public interest lawyer, can lawyers learn from what can they get out of poetry?
That's such a great question. So I think that, as I said earlier, this is a lawyer's collection in many ways. Poetry is words, and law advocacy is words. So they're both words. And poets are all about words, and lawyers are all about words. And my experience as a lawyer is that the way to reach people when you're arguing a case is sort of to find a way into the heart, into the emotions, not through the sort of, I mean, the logic is absolutely necessary, but you also need stories, and you need to grab people, especially the kind of work I was doing where I was trying to help people. And so I think the question is, are we speaking to people's hearts or are we speaking to their minds? And in a way, I think law speaks to people's minds and poetry speaks to people's hearts. And it's kind of a good combination together. And I don't want to overstate that, but I think they're very similar, because in both cases, it sort of our palette is words. And what could be more wonderful than to have your palette be words and to try to convince people both through their hearts and minds?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in this project itself, coming up with this anthology, what has poetry and this project meant to you?
Well, it's been amazing. I had actually heard a presentation a number of years ago on what was happening with the planet, sort of the facts, mm-hmm. you know, the kind of boiling hell we were headed towards.
The inconvenient truth.
Yes,
yeah,
so I heard it. Actually, the truth is I heard the inconvenient an inconvenient truth live before Al Gore made the movie.
Okay.
And it was brilliant, mm-hmm. and I think he's fabulous, but it was very, very upsetting. And I felt utter and complete despair after I heard that, and actually didn't know what to do with that despair and didn't know where to go with it. I just remember feeling there's no point. And this is, in a way, my answer to an inconvenient truth. It was sort of, well, no, let's flip that on its head and look at it a little differently. And so this book is an attempt to do that for other people, but it also has, what's been kind of amazing is it's done it for me. Like, working on this book has been, you know, this has been kind of a difficult 2 years in some ways in our country. I mean, there's been a lot going on. There's a lot of turmoil. There's a lot of dissension. And this book has been like a lodestar for me. I feel so optimistic now. And the opportunity to work, to read these poems, to almost learn them all by heart, to work with the Union of Concerned Scientists, to work with so many NGOs who are so determined to solve these problems. It's like I took my own pill of hope in writing this. And I feel very hopeful. And that's what this book did for me.
I wonder if here at the closing, I could ask you to read one more poem, the poem that appears on the back cover, which I think is also a fitting way to close because it is very hopeful. Would you mind reading a little selection that appears on the back of the book here, Poems for the Planet? This poem is by Gary Snyder, and it's a selection from For the Children.
And also, just to say that Gary Snyder is one of the sort of leading kind of echo poets still living of the last century, you know, who really has been a significant force in this poetry. For the Children by Gary Snyder. In the next century, or the one beyond that, they say are valleys, pastures. We can meet there in peace if we make it. To climb these coming crests, one word to you and your children. Stay together. Learn the flowers. Go light.
Well, thank you very much for sharing this gift, really, with all of us, this gift of inspiration, of hope, of beauty and goodness and action. So I want to close by thanking Elizabeth J. Coleman, poet, public interest attorney, and Penn Law alum, for spending time with us here today and for all the work you've done in putting together this really remarkable anthology.
Case in point, Great Minds on Law and Life, produced by the University of Pennsylvania Law School.